Well, it is true to say that I wasn't necessarily thanking Mark for this particular passage. We're in Matthew today, 5. We're carrying on with the Sermon on the Mount. We're starting at verse 21 and 26 to 26, and I'll read it in just a minute. But I did think perhaps at the start of the week that it was too hard, and I'd just give you a story of our murder mystery night instead, because that would be fun and light and, you know, kind of relates to murder. Actually, as I spent time studying it, and looking at it and talking it out with you know, Mark and different, just talking out different ideas that I had, actually feel like there is just so much in it to talk about. The challenge will be what to say and what not to say, more than whether to say it. So let's just read it before we start. So we're in Matthew 5, starting at verse 21, and I'll read to verse 26. You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother, Raka, is answerable to the Sanhedrin. But anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go and be reconciled to your brother. Then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still with him on the way, or he may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. I tell you the truth, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny. Break into small groups and discuss. this is a really challenging passage, bit of a Sermon on the Mount. And it starts actually a series of statements. There's a series of, the next few sections follow a pattern of, you have heard it said, but I say to you. And Jesus quotes directly in every single one of them, and I'm not going to address the others today because the other people have those for the next few weeks. But Jesus is quoting from the Torah, the law that was given to the people of Israel. And he's giving us that original law as it was written down and handed to the people, but then he expands. But expands isn't quite the right word. Deepens or makes significant now to every day, and some of it is really hard to find the language to describe exactly the change that Jesus is bringing when he says, you heard it said, but I now say to you. The law says you mustn't murder, but Jesus says you shouldn't be angry or even rest while another person is angry towards you. That's really challenging, isn't it? Jesus is actually enabling us to understand what the original law was intended to produce. Not actually changing what was said, but he's revealing what was meant by the original do not murder. And what he's teaching us through this section is to live fully reconciled lives, to live right relationship lives. Murder is, you know, the ultimate anti-relationship action that can take place, isn't it? And this, that was expressed in the Torah, was do not murder, but it's about relationship, how you live in connection to other people. And so what Jesus is doing here is he's saying, actually, I'm teaching you how to live in connection with other people, what right relationships mean. So rather than looking at what can be done wrong, and talking to us about that, he's teaching us about what should be done right. He's looking forward, looking at what we should do right, how we live in right relationships with one another. So he addresses murder first, and then he talks about anger, and then he talks about name calling. I mean, that's really raising the bar, isn't it, from do not murder. That's like a whole other level of levels, you know, right through to name calling. Jesus is calling his disciples to live beyond anger. He knows that anger is the seed of murder, and there's the obvious connection between, you know, anger and murder, as I've explored it. Anger is what leads to murder. And Jesus is saying, okay, anger, let's not have anger in our relationship, let's not hold on to anger. And if the passage stopped there, you know, we could perhaps excuse ourselves from spending lots of time listening on it, but Jesus goes on to give us some further explanations and puts what he means into context for us. He gives us three examples or contexts. He gives us a context of where you might be angry with another person. He gives us the example in terms of where someone you know is angry with you. And he gives us the example of where someone has a legal dispute against you. They're angry for a reason that the law would support and uphold. So let's be clear at the start then that Jesus says, don't be angry, as anger is the seed of murder. But he also is teaching us what to do when we are angry. So let's just be clear about that at the start. You know, it says don't be angry, but the rest of it is about teaching us what to do when we are angry. Mm-hmm. So let's be real about that. Jesus isn't saying you should never be angry. He's saying don't be angry, but when you're angry, this is what to do. So the first example then is in verse 22. I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother will be subject to judgment. Anyone who says to his brother, Raka, which means fool, or probably imbecile, we would translate it something like that, or empty head. I know, which kind of, you know, oh well, let's not go there. Anyone who says you fool will be in danger of the fire of hell. He takes this right through to name-calling and the ultimate judgment, and he puts those two together. There's nowhere to hide from it, is there? You see, followers of Jesus, because that's who he's talking to, the Sermon on the Mount, literally the people who were following him, they followed him there to hear him speak, and his disciples, he talks to them and he says, Jesus people, those who follow Jesus, they don't go around scarring other people, because they know those other people were their God's creation. They don't go around damaging God's creation by how they live. Right relationship lines before God. And suddenly that becomes extremely challenging for us in terms of our everyday. And I wanted to, it's really hard to make this topic light and fun. So I'm going to tell you some stories today, some of them light and some of them less light, about anger. I don't know if any of you will remember, but when Jack was in about year 4, 5 and 6 of primary school, he would come home. Any of you that would have dropped into our house after school would have recognised the pattern that occurred almost daily, because when Jack got home from school, he was genuinely angry. We wouldn't have a clue why. We never really got to the bottom of why. I don't know whether there was something going on at school or whether there's just an inconsistency between home and school that kind of caused it. I literally have no clue. But as a parent, I knew that I couldn't let him stay angry, because it's not a place to stay. He's angry, okay. We've got to do something about that anger. So there were two options that he had. When he got a little bit older, we tended to send him off running around the block until he felt more like himself, and then he could come home. Or the other one was to go and bounce on the trampoline until it was just all out, gone, dealt with. And I would say to him, take some time, come back when you're wearing your face and your attitude. Get rid of this that isn't you. It's not you to be this way. We know we have to deal with anger. We shouldn't settle for it. We can't let it rest in us. A neighbour once came to see me and told me a really sad story whereby her sister had hosted a party for her family and intentionally not invited her. And she was really angry. She was using all sorts of names about this sister. She was wanting to come up with a plan, and actually she did. She came up with a plan that she would have a party. She had no reason to have a party other than to have a party that she could then not invite her sister to. But actually, if you listen to that, you've got this anger that is starting to lead to somebody doing something. And you can see just the hints of anger leading to murder in that. And I challenged her. And I said to her, and I won't tell you her name, I said to her, you know, I think you should just try something else for 24 hours. And if you still feel like you want to do that, you know, that's fine. But I think you should decide to forgive your sister for 24 hours and see if you still feel like going to all that trouble to work out your anger. I didn't phrase it like that, it was just, but you get the story. Mm-hmm. And she came back to me after 24 hours. She's like, it's gone. And I just encouraged her to forgive. Every time the anger came up inside her about it, and the thought of what action she could take, and when you think of all the time she's spending imagining this thing that she should do, it's taking over her whole self, this anger. Actually, forgiveness of her sister was the way out of it. She didn't need to take any action towards her sister, or even with her sister, and she didn't go to her sister. She just needed to deal with what was inside of her in order to be free of it, to be free of this anger. I was trying to come up with a story that related to, not come up with, trying to think of how I could talk to you about anger from a personal point of view. And what I'm going to say now, I've agreed with Mark, it will be edited off the tape for the recording, and I'd appreciate that it stays in this room, and I'm sure I can trust you with that, because the only story that I can really tell you of a time when I have felt really angry is a really personal story. So, and I want to share that with you, because I think there's some things in it to learn that I didn't learn at the time, and some that I did, but I'll share it with you. About 8 years ago now, on New Year's Eve, I received a text at 5 to midnight, and the text invited me to my mum's wedding. And at the time, I didn't know my mum was in a relationship, and it was the furthest thing from my mind that might happen. And the text, to be honest, I assumed was a mistake, because it was so other to the kind of communication I would normally receive from my mum. And I phoned my mum and I said, Mum, I've got this weird text. Literally, I couldn't process where I couldn't believe that what I was reading was genuinely a thing, because it was so far from everything that I thought and understood. I phoned up, Mum, I think there's a weird text come from your phone, Mum. Something about a wedding invitation in April. I don't know what's happened. And she was like, oh no, can't you be happy for me? I'm getting married in April, I'm inviting you to the wedding. And I said, Mum, I can't talk to you about this now. I'll call you tomorrow. And I put the phone down. I'm not prone to putting the phone down. But I couldn't. I had nothing. Not a thing to say. And I genuinely felt I was angry. I was angry how dare she be in a relationship without telling me? How dare she decide to get married without telling me? How dare she try and replace my dad? How dare she? A billion things. I was so angry. I didn't know what to do. And I didn't want to do something on the phone that I would later, so I put the phone down. And I went to bed, because it was midnight on New Year's Eve, and there's not a lot else you can do at midnight on New Year's Eve, even though it says, you know, don't let the sun go down on your anger. The sun was already down. So I went to bed. I figured I had the whole next day. And I got up the next day. I didn't sleep much, to be honest, because I was just in utter turmoil at this devastation that I felt. And I phoned Mark's mum, actually, and I said, Mary, I have a situation that I can't bear. I can't bear where I find myself in the situation. And I can't bear how I feel about it, and I don't know what to do. I literally didn't know what to do. And we arranged to meet 2 or 3 days later, and I had a phone call with my mum, probably one of the most tense phone calls that I'd had, because I thought, I can't leave her 3 days before I speak. And she said, Mum, I don't quite know how to process all of this at the minute, and you know, I'll be in touch. Do you have anything else to say? And so I went and I sat with Mark's mum, and I told her everything that I felt. I, I, explained all of my anger, explained all of my, you know, brought back to me loads from losing my dad that, you know, I could cry about every day you're talking about it, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time there. But, you know, everything that I felt, I had to just bring it out before God, and I had to make a decision that day to forgive Mum, but I had to walk a journey of how I felt inside that's taken years, years and years to figure out. And so I spent that day with her and decided that, you know, we would make some decisions that were going to affect what I do, how I walk from that day forward. And some of those fly in the face of how I felt. Some of those absolutely flew in the face of how I felt. And as I was doing them, lots of them flew in the face of how I felt. On my mum's, I never expected to go to a wedding feeling like it was just wrong. It was just wrong. It felt wrong. It felt so wrong. Even with driving to the car, you know, on the way to the wedding, we had a conversation with the boys about it. Ash ended up being a page boy, which was bittersweet. You know, the first time he was a page boy, for me, felt bittersweet. And we had a conversation on the way there in the car where we said, it just feels wrong, all five of us, Jack particularly. It doesn't feel right, Mum and Dad. It just feels weird. But we had to walk that out because it was my mum's wedding. My mum was getting married, you know. She's overjoyed. She's been alone for 10 years after my dad died, and, you know, she's overjoyed to be loved and to know that feeling of being loved. And so there's that tension of the anger that I feel. But also this is my journey to walk this out with my mum, and I've got to walk this forgiveness that I've spoken in stark contrast to how I still feel. And that journey, it hurt, it was painful, physically painful in the car that way, that day on the way to a wedding. And many times since, and when I met, I think initially I thought, well, when I meet him, it will be all right, because he'll be a great guy. Well, he's different to anything I would have chosen. And I don't think I thought he was a great guy. In my anger, I couldn't see him that way. Couldn't see him as a great guy. If you put my dad on the North Pole, he would genuinely be on the South. Different kind of upbringing, different level of education, different outlook on life, different priorities, just honestly poles apart, and not what I would choose. But yes, it was my mum's choice, and I had to deal with everything that was in me and walk it out. And the only way to do that was to not submit to what was going on inside me. Because when we submit to what we feel, we end up taking action that's against what God would advise us to do. Whatever's going off in me that would take me over there, I had to choose to submit to God. Choose to submit to the decisions I made on about day 3 with Mary and her lounge in Whitney, because that was genuinely what I knew to be right. But what I knew to be right felt so completely opposite to what I felt. And that, to be honest, I felt like I had reason. You know, I was justified. I was justified in my anger because it was utterly ridiculous what she was doing and how she'd done it. It was just preposterous. It was just, I still can't get my head around it. But I had to submit to God and how he wants me to live rather than everything that's going off inside me. And I can honestly say to you that other people around the situation dealt with it even worse than I did. And I still now see the consequences of that in that for them, both in themselves and also in their relationship with my mum. And in fact, even in their children's relationship with their nana. You know, it's the consequences of submitting to what you feel rather than submitting to God. So, so poor for us. And Jesus is saying here, you know, I want you to be in right relationship. I want you to live this right relationship life that I'm giving you. I don't want you to be caught up in the pain or in the agony of actually living in submission to what's inside of you, the emotions that are inside of you, but actually in submission to my will for you. So we have it. Don't be angry. When you're angry, it says, doesn't it, in your anger, do not sin. And that's the choice we have to make. You know, when we're angry, we mustn't sin. We need to still submit to God. So Jesus goes on to give us two more examples. He talks about, the first one is about where someone you know is angry with you. And I asked Reuben's permission to share a story with you here. Jack and Reuben were often playing trains together. Jack was particularly a Thomas fan, and Jack always played with Thomas, and Reuben was allowed to play with the letter train. That's hard love. I haven't asked Jack's permission, actually. One day Reuben dared to touch Thomas, and suffice to say that Reuben ended up on the floor. And I separated the boys to their room. It probably was a long day if I sent them to their room, but I separated them before it got any further. Sent them both to their room to think about what they'd done, bearing in mind it was the same bedroom, but they were bunks, so you know they couldn't like make eye contact with each other. And I went up to them when I composed my own self and how I felt about them, and I said, "Come on, boys, this is just what do you need to do?" And Jack piped up actually quite quickly. Sorry, Reuben, pushing you over. Something like that. And Reuben declared, "I don't want to say the F word." And you couldn't go all with me. Okay, good. That's good. And I'm thinking, okay, this is a really bad school. He's like five. And very quickly it became clear, after a bit more discussion, that the F word was forgive. Not anything else. He didn't want to say the F word, the forgive word. Didn't even want to utter it to me, never mind to say it to his brother, because he was angry. He was angry towards, had anger towards Jack, and he wasn't ready to forgive him. He did forgive him, and it all panned out well, and you know, they're some of the bestest friends now. But Jesus is talking to us about where someone is angry towards us, where someone feels angered by us. So this section where in verse 23 and verse 24 is not talking about where we're angry. It's not talking about where I'm angry. It's talking about where someone else is angry with me. And he goes on to give us some ideas about how to deal with that. So he's really vague in this section. He says, where your brother has something against you. Something. We could replace it for anything. Something. He's really vague about what the thing is. And that's because Jesus isn't really talking in this passage. He doesn't want to emphasize this anger and whether it's right or not. He wants to say, I'm not talking about anger, I'm talking about living right relationship lives. Lives that are consistent with who I called you to be and who I empower you to be as a consequence of who I am. Jesus is talking about a completely different way of living. This radically different, reconciled lives. Right relationship lives where we remember in every moment, in every relationship, that this other person is God's creation and is deeply loved by him. And the way we act reflects that knowledge in every moment. Yes, it says our actions in relationships should avoid causing anger in the other at all times. But it's going to happen, isn't it? And Matthew 18 goes into great pains to explain to us that we shouldn't cause anyone else to stumble. You know, if anger is sinful as murder, then we shouldn't be acting in a way that causes another person to be angry. But equally, when we do cause anger in another person, what he's saying is that going to that person and dealing with that is more important than offering your sacrifice at the temple. That must have sounded crazy at the time. Crazy. This most important pivotal moment in the life of every Jewish person, giving your sacrifice at the temple. He's saying, drop your sacrifice, run from there, go, be reconciled to your brother. What he's saying is, in my kingdom, in my way of living, in the Jesus way of living, right relationships, it's more important that you go and be reconciled to your brother than it is that you come and offer sacrifice to me at the temple. That's crazy. That's a really significant reframing of how they thought about their faith and how they should live. You see, in Jesus' kingdom, where the law is written on hearts by the transforming power at work in those who love God by the power of the Spirit, and through the cross have right relationships, it's so much more important than sacrifice, these right relationships. I tried to think of examples of times when we might cause another person to be angry. And interestingly, there just aren't really any there. It doesn't say, you know, for example, when you do this or when you do that. Because and it's really hard to think of examples, because I think Jesus is putting this out there at a really high level. And he's doing it on purpose. Because actually what it means for me, and what it means for Chris, and what it means for Carol, well, that's for you to decide. That's for you to think, okay, where am I likely to be causing anger in another? I don't want to do that. And if I've done it, I need to deal with it. I need to drop everything I'm doing right now. I don't know, it might be, you know, come in here on a Sunday morning and you see someone across the room and they don't smile. I don't know what it might be. So, you know, you best get your smiley faces on next week, or everybody will be coming and saying, what have we done? Or have I angered you? But you know, it's that important. So ditch whatever you're doing. And go. Live in right relationship with your brothers and sisters. And he goes on, so then this other example. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. This is a really kind of relationally unclear example. We don't know whether we know this person or we don't. There must be some connection with them for us to be suing us. And the assumption here, let's read it, do it while you're still on the way, or he may hand you over to the judge will hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. The assumption is actually that the person has done the thing wrong, that they're in the wrong. It's not like, you know, he might be handed over or you might be handed over. It's like you might be handed over. There's nothing in there that makes us think, or I might be the person that it's about might be in the right. The assumption is that they've done something wrong. You know, again, Jesus is saying, we do things wrong. It's not about, you know, living perfection. It's about taking action to live right relationships, reconciled relationships in every area of your life. So there's a reason for the anger in this example, and it's got to the point of going to court. It definitely reads like the disciple or the Jesus follower is the person in the wrong, and Jesus is teaching us what to do. Well, that phrase, settle matters, is Greek, and I won't try and say the Greek word because Greek's not my thing, but I looked it up, and settle matters, that phrase means to make friends with, to be well disposed towards, and to be in agreement with. It's not just sort the issue out and walk your separate ways. It's sort the issue out and be well disposed towards, make friends with that person, or be in relationship with that person. It's very different to going to the court and getting a judgment and having to live according to the judgment and then going on and leading your separate life. It's not that at all. It's sort it out on the way and become friends with, be well disposed towards, be in agreement with, get on the same page as, live in relationship with, right relationship with this person. It's a challenge, isn't it, when we see that Jesus places this right relationship above any justification, above any sense of legally what is right and wrong and should happen. You know, he's placing this right relationship living above and beyond the legalities of any situation. I don't know if you ever find yourselves in a position where you can justify what you feel. You can, I could do, you know, in my story that I've told you about, I could justify well and truly much of how I felt. And Jesus is saying it's beyond what you can justify, beyond what's right and just. He values that relational living, that right relationship living beyond what you can justify, what you can argue is right for your own cause. And clearly what Jesus asks is, what Jesus challenges us to in this is really tricky. Really tricky. And we've got this thing where Jesus is asking us to live like people of his kingdom at a time when his kingdom is not fully manifest. You know, we know that, you know, in Jesus' kingdom, you know, if all right now was as Jesus would have it, there would be no anger, because we're called to live in loving fellowship with God and each other. And where Jesus rules and his rule is seen across with nothing flying in that space, that's how it will be. There will be no anger. And he's saying, okay, I'm the king, and I'm teaching my disciples and my people to live according to the rules of my kingdom, and in my kingdom there's no anger. He's bringing that kingdom into being right now in those who follow him and for those who follow him. He's teaching them that power from his kingdom has been unleashed through the work of the Holy Spirit to enable us to live in the way, in the ways of that kingdom, even though that kingdom isn't fully realized right now. See, when the fullness of his kingdom is made real, anger will vanish. There'll be no anger in Jesus' kingdom. And we as his disciples, or as followers of Jesus, he's calling us up, saying, this is my kingdom, this is what my kingdom's like. Be a foretaste of my kingdom where you live right now. Don't settle for the rules surrounding where you live right now, because you're citizens of my kingdom. You need to live the rules of my kingdom where you are right now. One of the commentaries I read puts it like this: the kingdom of God calls kingdom citizens to live now as if the kingdom had arrived. And this passage, to live with no anger, that's what that is, isn't it? To live now as if the kingdom had arrived. And so as followers of Jesus, we're those people, aren't we? We're the citizens of that kingdom, called to live out the ways of that kingdom now. Yes. And when we do that, we're like salt and light, a foretaste of what's coming, of all that's good, being wrestled from the future, from sometime in the future, into the right now. So that, as Mark said last week, the world as it is right now doesn't go to rot. We're the hope of what is to come. So what does this mean for us? Well, living this life of radically reconciled relationships, this right relationships life, I think is a challenge to us all. Jesus' examples are very active. They're not at all passive. They require conscious action, both of them. They're not just kind of let it flow and it'll be all right, you know, if you're a good person. They're, you know, if you're at the altar giving your sacrifice and you remember something, ditch it and go and sort it out. If you're on the way to court, don't just rely on the fact that this is going to get sorted in court. Settle it on the way. They're active. They're involved. They require participation on our part. We can't stand back from this. So what do we need to do? Well, I think we have to go about our everyday life paying attention to all of our relationships. Maybe we have to take time to reflect every day, to constantly be asking ourselves, have I angered another person today? Am I angry with another person? Is there anger inside of me? My long story that I referred to earlier, there are still days now where I have to deal inside with how I feel because of the consequence of that I faced at the time. I have to go again to God and say, God, I choose to live according to what you are calling me to, rather than to what I feel. John 13:24 teaches us that it starts, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples. Our love, our right relationship living, our reconciled relationship life is what will display to others that we are his disciples, what will make us that salt and light that Jesus is asking us to be. So when someone's angry with us, or we're angry with someone, or we've angered someone, Jesus doesn't leave us any room for excuses. And there were a few excuses that came to mind, so I thought I'd share with you in case they snared you as well as me from time to time. Sometimes we find ourselves saying, oh, that's their problem. They have to deal with it. That's their problem. It's easy, isn't it, to say that? I've heard that. Jesus would say, in this passage it seems clear to me that he makes it our problem to grow and try to be reconciled to that person. Interestingly, the passage doesn't talk about what the other person feels or how they respond or whether it's resolved for the other person. It's not in there at all. What's in there is about what's in here and about us and taking responsibility for what we can do. There's no excuse, no room to say, give them time, they'll get over it. If you're standing at the altar, ditch your sacrifice. Go. Deal with it. Do something about it. He doesn't give us room to say, well, I didn't do anything. I don't understand what the problem is. It's nothing to do with me. He doesn't give us room to say that. If you remember that your brother has something against you, go. Find out what it is. Deal with it. I've said this one. Well, they just need to step out of it. They just need to put it behind them and move on. Well, I think Jesus would say, you just need to snap to it. Do you remember we talked about, in fact I did it, we talked about right relationships when we were thinking about our discipleship toolbox, our toolboxes for living as a disciple. And we talked about us being an out, and I did a triangle. And it struck me, as I've been preparing for today, that there's a lot of similarities with what Jesus is saying here to the illustration that I used about outstretched arms and head to God. I've got to be constantly submitting to God, but I've got to be constantly reaching out. And the call to be followers of Jesus is that these outstretched arms, they're not static, but they're stretching out actively, choosing, dynamic. It's not like it's not a statue thing, it's an active, a dynamic, constantly pursuing reconciliation, both with my brothers and sisters and in my relationships beyond my brothers and sisters. We're seeking out for where there might have been any anger caused in those we know and those we don't, because we're Jesus people who live by the power of Jesus, by the power of his kingdom that he has brought into being right now in us, as we're tuned into God through his power at work in us. We need to be living in submission to God, not submission to our emotions. And I don't know where the challenge for you is in all of what I've said this morning, but I just want to give you some time, a few moments now, to just reflect. Okay, where does that hit for me? What does that hit for me? I don't know, there might be something you have to do when you go away today. Maybe you have to pick up the phone or write a note or send somebody an email. I don't know what it is, but there's got to be these, you know, we're Jesus people. We're those people, you know, to be that salt and light. This is what it means. Don't settle with anger in your heart. Do something about it. Submit to God rather than submitting to what's going off inside of you, because the way to live the life that Jesus has for you, that's how to do it, to submit to God and not to live controlled by those emotions. Jesus, we are grateful for your teaching on how to live, but equally we're challenged. We want to be active participants in your kingdom, but we know that we need your help. We need your help in our relationships. We need your help to deal with our hearts. We do invite you, Holy Spirit, to speak to each of us today. We want to be salt and light. We want to be those who are a foretaste of all that you are going to bring into being through your rule and reign. We want to be hope bringers. We want to be those who are learning to live according to your rule and your reign in our own lives and spreading that around generously, liberally. Would you help us to submit to you, and in doing so, to turn away from anger? Would you help us to honour you with our actions, but also with our hearts? That we would genuinely be salt and light, and your kingdom would be at work in us and through us by the power of your Spirit, because we are Jesus followers, and that is what we want to be. Amen.